It's Ken.
What's up, man?
How you doing? Are you okay?
Yeah, still suck the wind.
Yeah.
Just trying to get these documents finished.
Yeah. All right. A friend of mine's in foreclosure. He's been in since probably like 5 years already. The bank has sent the state of Rhode Island has some new laws or some new rules that you have to go into this mediation case in the state set up mediators to look over the situation and mediate, whatever that means. They say they have no court, they have no teeth. If this homeowner wins the mediation, can he take that to the court and get a judgment against the bank?
Well, he could try. I mean, you can try anything. The problem that we have is, you know, all of these judges, they're all communists.
Yeah.
None of these judges anymore take anything serious. I mean,
yeah.
If you look at what's going on in Lotus's case, we now have attorneys coming out that are looking at this, and one attorney who actually sat in the hearing, last hearing that Lotus had, where she cross-examined the whatever he was, psychologist, psychiatrist, whatever it was, for 3.5 hours on the witness stand.
Wow.
Actually was able to get the psychiatrist or whatever it was to admit that she's perfectly sane, that she has the capacity to understand what's going on. And after the fact, about 2 weeks later, the judge determined that she wasn't competent to stand trial. Even though the professionals admit that she is. Wow. And then, which they've now done since that time, is they now have private communiques between the hospital that they have her in, the state hospital they have her in, and the judge, in private conversations that were recorded, where the judge is telling the head of the hospital that she's at not to give her access to things, paper and pencils and dictionaries and access to anything where she can bring any more, you know, documents or file any more documents into the court.
Wow.
Okay. So we have the Provost Marshal's office. We have the U.S. Marshal's office. We have several generals in the military that are reviewing her case in every instance. Okay. Nobody's doing anything. But the attorney that was there for the 3.5 hours took 11 pages of notes. And when he came out of that thing, and I talked to him several weeks ago, I don't know, 2 months ago now maybe, but he said after sitting in that hearing and knowing what's going on, looking at not all of her pleadings, but most of her pleadings, he said it's the most heinous, gross violation of due process of law he's ever seen in his life.
Yeah.
And he admitted that the judge is committing treason on the bench.
There you go.
Okay, and it's like, so what doesn't anybody understand about this? Because if he's doing this and he's getting by with it, every judge in the country is. So the reason that they're going to mediation is because people are finally realizing there's no such thing as due process of law in this country, and the reason is there is no due process of law in a socialistic country.
Yeah.
So you're in a total dictatorship. So here's what I can tell you what the guy needs to do if he hasn't done it already. Title 18 says they cannot use counterfeit documents in any kind of a securities action, okay? They have to use the original. Now, I can tell you with almost absolute certain fact, I can't say this 100% of the time, because in one of the issues that the people brought this up, they actually went, well, I can't say that for sure because nobody examined the documents. But the banks separate the promissory note from the mortgage agreement. When they do that, they've separated out the assets that the quote-unquote supposed loan is based on, which nullifies the contract.
Right.
So what they do is they take copies and they bring the copies in, okay? And the copies are counterfeit unless they've been enlarged by 25% or more, or they've been reduced in size by 25% or more. So it's a violation of federal law to use anything but the original document in the action. So he needs to subpoena the original documents, because if the bank can't bring the original documents in, okay, then they have no right to foreclose. Now, the other thing that he can do, and then he can turn around and do file a cross complaint and a counter complaint for fraud on the court. He wants to do that. There's a lot of options. But the other thing he needs to do is he needs to challenge the prosecutor's ability to invoke the jurisdiction of the court, because if he doesn't have the original document, okay, then he can't place the party under subject matter or in personam jurisdictions with fraud. I mean, U.S. versus Throckmorton, fraud vitiates all contracts. Well, the contract initially was a fraudulent document because they never exposed to him that they were going to use his promissory note, put it deposited in a transaction account, and then 4 days, 5 days later, 6 days later, whatever, draw a check against that same account that they deposited his check in, okay, turn that check over to the homeowner, okay, and then say it was a loan. It wasn't a loan. It was an exchange. So he needs to subpoena all of the bank's ledger entries in relation to their quote-unquote claim that he owes the bank money.
Yeah.
Okay, if you analyze and you do the subpoenas and then you analyze the account, okay, it'll show that the house was paid in full when they accepted the promissory note.
Yeah.
Because the promissory note created the money, quote unquote, that was lent, which was not lent at all.
Right.
So, and here's what they do in all of these cases. And if you got a piece of paper and a pencil, I'll work you through this so it's easy to understand. But if you take a piece of paper and on the left side of the paper, okay, you put a line crossed horizontally on both sides of the page, and then you put in the center of that line, put two vertical lines in a column on each side of the page. And then in the center of those two vertical lines in the page, you put a zero, okay? Now, on the left side, you can put bank assets. And on the right side, you can put bank liabilities. Okay, now, that's two accounts that are established, a bank asset side and a bank liability side, and each of those sides has on the left side of the double line is the debit, on the right side of the double line is the credit side of that ledger entry. And on the right side, it's the same thing. On the left side is the debit side of the account, on the right side is the credit side of the account. So what you end up with in each of these mortgages is you have two sides of the ledger, one being the asset side of the ledger for the bank, the other being the liability side of the ledger for the bank. Now, the asset side is the account receivable side, and the other side, the account liability side, is the account payable side for the bank. And then they both have two ledger entries, debit, credit side, debit, credit side of the ledger. Now, that's the ledgering that the bank uses. What they do is this. The bank asset side of the ledger is the only side of the ledger that's ever brought in to the court, is the ledgering on the bank assets, because that mortgage agreement to the bank is an asset.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, that accounting department that manages that mortgage agreement on the bank asset side of the ledger is on maybe the second floor of the bank, where it's easy for people to go up one floor and get to that division of the bank. The bank liability side of the ledger, however, is usually next to the top floor of the bank. Okay? And that side of the ledger is never brought in to the courts.
Yeah.
Because that side of the ledger exposes that there's no debt, because the ledgering on that side of the ledger shows a zero balance. Okay?
Yeah.
And the other side of the ledger shows what's left of the quote-unquote loan, but nobody ever subpoenas the bank liability side of the ledger.
Oh, I see.
Okay? So what he can do is he can go back in and say, wait a minute, folks, we're missing half of the ledgering here. Oh, no, we're not. Here's the ledgering right here, and it shows all the debits and payments and the balances, blah, blah, blah. Okay, well, that's fine on that side of the ledger. That's the bank's asset side of the ledger. We want to see also the bank's liability side of the ledger as it applies to this promissory note. And when you do that, you're going to see a hiccup. Oh. And usually they'll leave the battlefield.
Really?
Oh, yeah, because they can't. The minute that they produce that, you take both of those ledgering, and then you subpoena and bring in a forensic bank auditor that can explain the ledgering, okay, they automatically lose. And the minute that they lose one of those on that kind of a ordeal there, okay, it opens the vault for everybody.
Yeah.
So, and then when they're doing this whole thing, they're doing it with counterfeit paperwork.
Yeah.
Because they just bring in copies and say, well, this is a copy and the copy. And here's the part where most of the people involved in this, they get lost. They don't understand. They'll take the copy and they lay it in front of the guy that they're foreclosing on. And they'll say, is that a copy of your mortgage agreement? Here's a copy of the mortgage agreement that you signed. Is that your signature? And what's everybody do?
Say, yeah.
Well, yeah, that's my signature. And the reality is, no, it's not your signature. And these are the games they play with us in the education system. Is a copy of your signature your signature?
No.
And the answer is no, it's not. Okay?
No, you're right.
Okay, so here's where they nail everybody. And here's how they nailed this last colonel that we were helping with his foreclosure. Okay? He didn't get that part. Even though we ran it by him just like I'm running it by you,
Oh. He
still didn't get it.
Oh.
In the court, when they laid that document down, said, is that your signature on that agreement? And his attitude was, yeah, that's my signature. Lose.
Wow.
Lose.
That's
the only thing. The only thing that's your signature is the blue ink signature on the original document. Yeah. Any copy of a signature does not transfer authority with the copy. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do.
The only thing that transfers authority is the original blue ink signature.
Yeah.
So if you can get people to understand that if they put down a copy in front of you, and it's not the original blue ink signature, and it's not increased in size over the original document, it's the same size, that's a counterfeit, and it's a breach of Title 18, I think it's 451 or 449, somewhere back in there.
Yeah.
Okay, relating to a counterfeit document. So what your guy can do is, if he wants to go, if they're sending him to mediation, okay, what he needs to establish is, first of all, where's the rules of mediation? And the reason I'm saying this is I've got another guy, it's not in a foreclosure issue, in another state that's going through this same bullshit. And they try to come into him and say, well, we're sending you to mediation. And then they come back and they say, okay, well, here's the demand for production of documents. And here's interrogatories. And you have to answer those interrogatories and do this production of documents before we go into mediation. Okay. Well, I asked a guy, I said, well, have they provided you with a copy of the books of the rules for mediation? And he said, no. I said, well, then how can they come forward with you and demand that you produce documents and all this other crap when there's no rules that state anything related to the rules of mediation? They're trying to use the rules of the court against you in a mediation setting because the attorneys are trying to figure out how they can quash you in mediation.
Yeah.
So they don't have to go to court.
Yeah.
So he had another friend of his that's a disbarred attorney, and his disbarred attorney said, oh, no, you have to answer that, and you have blah, blah, blah. I said, no, you don't. I said, you're not a member of the bar, so when the judge tells him he's got to answer that shit as an attorney, he has to do that. But you don't, unless the judge signs an order. And so what he went back in and said, they kept saying, oh, well, you got to answer these, and you didn't provide us any of this and any of this and this. He said, well, I didn't think we were going to trial. And they said, well, we're not. You're going to mediation. And he says, well, where's the rules of mediation that say that I have to answer these interrogatories and provide all this evidence before we go to mediation? Okay, and everybody was jumping up and down and screaming and hollering. And guess what? Judge says, there is no rules for mediation.
Whoa, wonderful. Jesus.
So guess what? They can't force him to do what they were trying to force him to do. And now the attorney, who's a disbarred attorney, he calls me up. And he's going, where the fuck are you coming up with all these rules and blah, blah, blah. I've never heard of this shit before. And I said, well, that's probably because you're just looking at the local rules of the court. He goes, well, yeah, we have to follow the local rules of the court. I said, well, I don't read the local rules of the court. This is what we mean. I said, I only read the controlling rules of the court. And he goes, what do you mean the controlling rules of the court? I said, Title 28 United States Code are the controlling rules of the court. And he goes, what code? I said, Title 28 of the United States Code. He goes, I never even heard of that. I said, so really, you're an attorney, and you've never heard of the federal civil judicial procedures and rules? He goes, what?
Yeah.
I said, yeah, it's Title 28. He goes, well, I've never even read those.
Yeah. Jesus.
So there's your attorney. So if I was him, I would, he can do it either before he goes into mediation. Okay, but the first thing he needs to ask is, okay, you need to provide me with a set of the rules of mediation, which they probably don't have, okay? And what they're doing is because these courts are so corrupt, and now you're purely a socialist country, there is no such thing as rule of law happening anywhere in this country. Probably hasn't happened anywhere in the last 20 years.
Yeah.
Okay. So he can go in and demand, first of all, provide me with a copy of the rules for mediation. And then I would subpoena and ask, can I subpoena documents to utilize in the mediation? Because if they say no, then his next question is, can anything I say in mediation be used against me in a court of law? And when they say, well, yeah, that's why they want this other guy to issue all his, answer the demand for production of documents and answer all the interrogatories. But when you ask him, well, can I use this? Can you use anything we do here or any documents that I might provide for mediation? Can we use that in a court of law? And they say, yeah, well, my answer is, y'all ever examine the Fifth Amendment? Because anything he says and does, they're going to use against him in mediation.
Wow.
Okay. So it's all a trick.
Yeah.
To drag people in. And then if they say, yes, you can subpoena documents, then I would say, okay, fine. First thing I'm going to subpoena is I want an accounting of the bank's total fiscal ledgering a week before I submitted the paperwork for my loan, quote unquote. And then I want a copy of all the accurate ledgering on both sides of the ledger for the bank's liability side and the bank's asset side, which will then show that the bank didn't have the money on the ledgering of the bank's ledger prior to them accepting his promissory note. And after they accepted his promissory note, then you'll see the balance, the amount of his quote-unquote loan appear on the bank ledgering.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, which proves that there is no loan. There's no balance due.
Right.
When you look at the total ledgering of the bank.
I get it.
Now, if he insists on that and he understands that, you can get that across to him, okay, and he stands on his own ground, okay, then they're going to come back with an offer, or they'll just dismiss the case.
Wow.
Depending on the bank, because you're proven bank fraud.
Wow.
And you're proven, if you do it right, not only do the prove the bank fraud, but you can prove that the attorney is involved in the bank fraud.
Wow.
By bringing a fraud on the court. Okay.
Wow.
So now when you take that and what we now have the ability to do, and we don't know the cost of it yet, but we can do a complete ledgering on his account in that bank. Okay. And we can pull up all the bonds that were issued against his mortgage, which I guarantee you they're bonds drawn up against his mortgage.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so we can pull the CUSIP numbers and all that stuff. It takes a while to do that.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure what the total cost on that is. I know the CUSIP side of the stuff, to pull all the CUSIP and get the total CUSIP report, runs anywhere from about $200 to $300 to have that report done, and it takes upwards of 3 weeks to a month to get it done. Now, we can also, and this is for your ears only, our trust, our banking trust, okay, is a FinCEN agent. If you know what FinCEN is.
I know, I can't relate what, I know what it is, but I don't know what it is. I've heard of it.
Well, it's Financial Crime Enforcement Network.
Oh, yeah,
inside
yeah,
the United
yeah.
States. It's inside the Treasury Department.
Yeah, yeah, IRS.
Okay. No, it's not IRS. It's a separate agency.
Oh, okay.
But it interfaces with the Treasury Department. It's part of the Treasury Department.
Oh, yeah. I've seen those.
Okay. And the purpose of it is money laundering, which is exactly what the bank is involved in a mortgage agreement.
Oh.
They're laundering your money. Okay. They're laundering your promissory note and they're laundering it because they're not calling it an exchange, which it is. They're calling it a loan, which it's not.
Yeah.
It's an exchange. So they're laundering money in the process. So as FinCEN agent, and we got the badge number and the PIN numbers and all the shit to access this, we can go in and cause a forensic audit on any bank account number that anybody can give us anywhere in the world.
Wow.
And it takes quite a while to do that, and I don't know what the costs are. We're trying to find out what the costs involved to do that are. And but that's another option that has been opened up to us now that we have we were an agent for a long time, and then with the mix-up and the bullshit that went on inside the Treasury with the elections and stuff, now we're back in proper standing, and now we're even in a, my understanding is that we're in a position where we're even in a supervisory capacity.
Wow.
Within FinCEN inside that department.
Wow.
And to give you an idea of what FinCEN has accomplished and now has is that the FinCEN agency now is tied in through people that actually work inside of financial organizations and departments and banks and different things at different levels. There's over 400 active trained journalists within those institutions that are in there undercover, and there's 400 of them. They were the ones that were responsible in nailing Deutsche Bank for trading Iran money and supporting terrorists that they got fined $10 billion
for. Wow. Wow, cool.
Yeah, so, but that would be my suggestion right there is, first of all, they're in violation of Title 18 if they're using copies, which you know they are. So he has to demand and subpoena the original documents, the blue ink signature documents, both of them, have to be brought into the court and examined. And that's where this attorney didn't understand what we were trying to get, or this colonel in the military didn't understand what we were trying to tell him.
Yeah, I see.
But that's not your signature, dude. Yeah. That's a copy of your signature.
Yeah.
That went right in one ear and right out the other.
Oh, too bad.
Okay, and he went in and they said, is that your signature? And he went, yeah.
Oh, and, man.
Yeah, how stupid. But people just don't get that, you know? We're so inundated and so brainwashed into just saying, you know, using terms without even knowing what we're thinking about what we're saying. And so after the fact, it was like, wait a minute, man. Was that a blue ink signature that they showed you? No. Okay, well then, how could it be your signature? Well, it was a copy of my signature. Well, your copy of your signature ain't your signature, dude.
Wow.
Oh, shit, I forgot about that. The time we talked to him about that until the time he had the hearing was over a year.
Yeah.
Okay, so, you know, it's just little scripts like that. And then a dude lost a $3.5 million home sitting on Lake Norman in North Carolina.
Oh, my God.
In a non-judicial foreclosure.
Oh.
That we stopped, okay, by having him read a 2-page document into the record that they refused to allow him to file on the record in the clerk's office into the case.
Wow.
In a hearing where there wasn't even a judge. The hearing was held by the assistant clerk of the court, which is federal violation tort.
Yeah.
So it's unbelievable what's going on because of the lack of the knowledge of the American people. But that's what I would do. I would challenge the jurisdiction of the prosecutor. I would challenge the ability of the prosecutor to invoke the jurisdiction in the court because he's using counterfeit documents if they don't have the originals. And I guarantee you they don't have the originals that they've placed on the record. And he demands that they do, you know, bring the originals in, and then I would subpoena all of the ledgering prior of the bank's ledgering prior, you know, a week prior to the putting the action in. If the judge gives them any shit, it's like real easy, judge. I'm subpoenaing the arithmetic to prove the fraud that they brought into your court. Now, if the judge doesn't even allow him to do that, then what's the judge engaged in?
Right, fraud.
Fraud, okay. Initiates his, terminates him, he's supposed to lose his position and his pension and everything else out the, because when the judge involves himself in the fraud, okay, that fraud is treason against his oath.
Yeah.
And that's treason. He's gone. Gitmo. See ya. It's what's supposed to happen.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, they know they got the American people dumbed down so far. Or know what's going on. But anyway.
Okay, well, I'll put this together for my friend, and we'll do the subpoena, get the rules.
All right, so the primary thing he has to understand is he has to cause them to prove that they loaned him money.
Right, exactly.
And they can't do that.
Right.
If he does it correctly, they can't produce the documents that prove that they loaned him money.
Right.
And if he does it correctly, he can prove that they did an exchange and called it a loan.
Yeah.
Which is exactly what they did, and that's fraud. So.
Okay.
All right, anything else you need?
Thanks for your time, Bill. Thank you.
All right, man. No problem. Thanks, man. All right, talk.